We are holding on Kuf Chaf Hey Omid Bey's 10 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of discussing, we were discussing the fact that our Mishnah talks about certain cases of Tumas Nes and did not mention Tumas Oihel, so we would bother, Gemara was bothered by why not, and we gave a couple of answers. One of them is that we're talking, you have certain, as we learned yesterday, certain technicalities where, in fact, a bone that contains marrow might not be matami ba'oihel for one reason or another. Then we said, then we brought Rabbi Yochanan's logic, which is that the Mishnah does actually mean Tumas Oihel as well, but it's calling it Tumas Maga, and Negea touching also includes Oihel. So that led us into a long discussion of where do we find that. So among other things, we were talking an opinion of Rabbi Yossi. So we were talking about an opinion of Rabbi Yossi who says that certain kinds of Tumas Oihel can be called Negea, can be called touching. Now we said in that connection, then you have a case where you have a mess lying in the open air, and above it is a network of ropes, such as is used for the such as is used for the frame of a bed, or a screen, a window screen made up of Rashi describes thin pieces of wood or thin pieces of metal arranged in a crosswise pattern. So now you have less than a tefach between one and another, and usually you need a tefach in order for tumah to be able to to be considered an oil. So we said that if a person, so Rabbi Yossi had said that if a person touches, if a person puts his finger or any other body part over the holes between the ropes or between the parts of the screen, over the mess, then he's going to become tameh. But if not, if he touches the ropes themselves or the material of the screen itself, then he won't become tameh. So we said one way to look at it, Abaye had said, is that we're talking about that if we talk about one possibility, maybe these ropes or screens are within a tefach more than a tefach above the mess. And Abaye said, no, even if they're within the tefach, they're not considered the clothing of the mess, and they're not mevatel to it, they're not botel to it. So we asked that in that case, why shouldn't it be considered tumah tmunah? It should be considered. You have a mess that's not under an oihel, some kind of covering, a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. And as we've learned so far, such tumah spreads upwards indefinitely. And therefore, it should be matame, the person, no matter whether he touched the ropes or whether he touched the spaces between the ropes. Either way, anything that's over the exact footprint of the mess should be matame, going upward. So we said that Rabbi Yossi had said tumah tmunah in a very class, that a hidden tumah like that, also known as tumah ritzutza, does not spread upward, and therefore, in other words, in effect, every place where there's a rope is going to prevent the tumah from spreading up further, even though it's not a tefach wide. So now the Gemara says, "Umenot temra." So where do you get that point that Rabbi Yossi would hold such a thing? So like this, Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Aulos, Tevas Hamigdal, a cubby in a cabinet. So you have a wooden cabinet, and as we learned yesterday, wooden cabinets themselves are not always Makabel Tumah, because many times they're called Kli Eta also the Nachas, they're a wooden keli, which is meant to be left in one place more or less permanently, and therefore they're often not Matame. Now, sometimes you have then, there's going to be little cubbies or little or drawers or things like that in it, so now you have one of those things. Shiyesh Profeseach Tefach, if now you have one of those things, is a Tefach wide, if it has, in other words, the space is at least a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. A piece of tumah in there, a piece of a mess that's in there, is not tmuna, it's not hidden, because it has an oihel within which to spread. But the opening of the cubby is not a tefach wide. So in other words, let's say, imagine you have one of these cubbies or drawers or something. The actual inside space of the cubby or the drawer is at least a cubic tefach. But now the drawer is, let's say, only partially open, and you don't have a tefach of opening. It's not open to the extent of a tefach. So now the Mishnah says, tumah b'sodah, if the tumah is found inside that drawer, a bias tummy, the contents of the house are going to be tummy. There's no tefach no tefach over there, and you usually need a tefach for tumor to spread from one place to another. So we'll explain in a moment why it is that nevertheless the house, the contents of the house become tummy. On the other hand, tumor b'bayis, but if the tumor, if the mess is in the house, anywhere in the rest of the house, mashal b'selicha tohar, then whatever's inside that drawer or that cubby will remain tohar. Why should derech tumah lotis v'ein derech tumah likones? Because it's the way of tumah to spread, to go outward and not to go inward. In other words, normally you have that a mess after all, a mess at some point you're going to take them out of the house and bury them, or even if you have only a piece of a mess or something, still you have the concept of covering a mess, you're going to take them and bury them at some point. Therefore, we can consider that the way of the tumah is to go outward. It's a normal thing that the tumah is going to be eventually taken out of this drawer and brought out of the house and given a proper burial. So therefore, we can say that when it's in the drawer, we're going to say that the house, as long as even if it's only a little bit open, nevertheless, we're still going to say the tumah spreads outward to the house, and the contents of the house becomes tameh, but not the other way around, because there's no reason, if the mess is inside the house, why it should affect what's inside the drawer. If it was open, to the extent, if the drawer was open at tefach y, then that would be different, and the tumah would be able to go in. Anyway, that's the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yossi, Metahar, Rabbi Yossi says, either way, it's Tahar. Because Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean, Soif Truma Lotzis? What do you mean the Truma is necessarily going to go out and be Metame the house? The fact is that the fact is, you could take it out piecemeal, you could take it out a half Kazayas at a time, and that's not going to be Metame the rest of the house. Or conceivably even, you can burn it in its place. Now, we're talking about mess of you're not really supposed to burn them, but nevertheless, the point is, it is possible to burn it or otherwise make it less than a kazayis. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, don't tell me that necessarily the mess is going to be taken out at some point and be the time of the house. It's not. That's the first part of the Mishnah. The Katani Sefer. Now the Sefer, that Mishnah continues with another place. Hamidah b'Pesach. Suppose that a person took this. Suppose a person took this cabinet with the drawers in it and put it in the entrance and put it at the entrance to the house. Or pischa lachutz with the opening of it facing towards the outside. So then, tumah b'seicha bayis tahor. Now, if there's any tumah inside the drawer, the contents of the house will be tahor. Because now there's no tumas oil. There's no tefach opening. It's not tmuna. It's not a tumah because it's in a cubby which is one by one tefach, and it's not going and it's facing towards the outside, so it's not going to go backwards into the house and make anything in the house tahor and make anything in the house tumah. Tumah b'bayis and vice versa. If the tumah is inside the house, mashal b'seicha tahor, then what's inside the cubby is also going to be tahor. Okay, so in other words, in short, we have four cases in the Mishnah. And we see that Rabbi Yossi argues on, one of them. We have three of the cases where other things will remain, where certain things will remain tahor. The case where the closet with the cubbies in it is inside the house, and where the tumah is in the house. So we said the contents of the cubbies will be tahor. We said if the cabinet is standing by the door of the house facing outward, whether the tumah is in the cubby or whether it's in the house, either way it won't spread to the other one. And we're saying Rabbi Yossi argues in the case where the tumah is in the cubby, will it spread to the house? The Tanna Kamma says yes. Rabbi Yossi says no. Now the Toni Allah. Now we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Mataka. We learn in a Braisa that Rabbi Yossi says that it's Tahor. So we have to first figure out which case is Rabbi Yossi referring to when the Braisa says Mataka. Ahaya, which part of the Mishnah is it referring to? Ilema Asefa, is it referring to the Sefa, the case where the cabinet is standing by the door of the house, facing outward? Well, you don't need Rabbi Yossi to tell us that it's Tahor. Tanakana Nami Tahori Kamatahar. In that case, the Tanna Kamma also says that it's Tahor, whether the tumah is inside the cubby and then it won't spread to the house, or whether the tumah is inside the house and it won't spread to the cat, to the cubby, or anything else in the closet. So there's nothing for Rabbi Yossi to argue about. Ella, the Kong, Ella, so it must be. What does the Braisa mean? The Kama Tanna Kamma, Tumah B'Seicha, Bayis Tahor. Again, referring to the first part of the Mishnah, where it had said that if the Truma is inside the cubby, if the Kazayas of the nest or whatever it is inside the whatever part of the nest that's there, is inside the cubby, Habayis Tome, then the Tanakhama said all the contents of the house are Tome, and the reason is one of two things. Either because of this concept that the normal thing is for Tuma to go outward, because again, then the mess is going to be taken out at some point, and therefore even now we can consider as though it's already being taken out, and therefore that's going to be metame all the contents of the house as it's being carried through. So either that, or if you want to say, another way you could look at it is that because it's tumah tmuna, because it could be a case where the tumah has less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach above it. So in other words, it actually explains you can have in the ratio it clearly said that it had a tefach, a cubic tefach inside. So then it's not a tumah tmuna, but you have sofa lotis because the cubby is partially open. Then you have also you could have a case where Rashi explains where you don't have when you have a tefach by tefach by tefach in it, then that's what's saying that the tumah would remain contained in it, and the only reason it would spread to the house is because of this concept d'rabbanan of sof tumah lotus. But you could also have a case equally well that the cubby is not a tefach by tefach by tefach. So in that case, in other words, for the Tanakhama, so even though the Mishnah had only mentioned one case where the cubby is in fact one cubic tefach, the fact is you can also deduce from it, and what would happen if it wouldn't have a cubic tefach, then we would say we would call it tumah tmuna. It would be a tumah that has, it would be a source of tumah, a piece of a mess that does not have a cubic tefach above it, and therefore would be metame. So now in that case, then you would have the problem is tumah tmuna, that it's a tumah that's hidden inside the thing bekas, or which spreads upward, and therefore, in other words, it would penetrate through the entire as if it penetrated through the entire thickness of the closet, and now you have tumah in the house, and therefore the contents of the house become tame. So therefore, the Tanakhama would say, depending on the circumstances, one way or the other, the house is going to be tumah when you have tumah inside that cup. So Rashi points out in a little bit of detail over here that the last case of the Mishnah didn't mention anything about Kaseach Tefach, but it just mentioned that it was standing in the doorway. But we can understand that it means it's the same kind of case as beforehand. But in other words, what it is the Tanakhama is saying that when the closet is in the house, then the contents of the house are going to be tame no matter what, whether there's Pesach Tefach or not. Whether the case where the Tanakhama explicitly said where there's Pesach Tefach, where the cubby is a cubic Tefach, or where not, where it's Tumah Tmuna. And the reason why Rabbi Yossi understands that from the Tanakhama is because since the Tanakhama continued with the case of the cabinet standing in the doorway and saying that it's a they had said only because there's Pesach Tefach to save the house from becoming Tomei, otherwise we would in fact say the house is Tomei, even though it's standing in the doorway. Why? Because Tumah Tmuna Bekas, because it would be penetrating through the roof of the closet, and that's still inside the door, because we're talking about standing in the doorway. It's not the closet itself, it's not actually outside the house, only the opening of it is towards the outside, and therefore the implication is the Tanakhama would be saying that it's Tomei. So Rav Yossi is telling him, not so simple. I'm arguing with you on two points. You're telling me that the tumah normally goes out, and therefore that's the reason why if the tumah is inside the cubby, why you should be metame the rest of the house. I will tell you, that's not necessarily. It's not necessarily derech tumah lotzis that it's necessarily going to go out in a way that's going to be metame the contents of the house, the people or the contents of the house. After all, as he said, he could take it out a half at a time, or he could burn it in its place, so it's not necessarily, there's no not necessarily a reason that it should be metame the house. So Rabbi Yossi is saying, I don't agree with this whole concept of sof tumah lotus. Second of all, says the Rabbi Yosef, to the Tanakama, or to Ka'amat, Tumat, Tumuna Bekas. And second of all, you're telling me that in a case where there was no Poseach Tefach, where the cubby was not in fact one, was not in fact a cubic Tefach in size, and therefore you're arguing that it's considered Tumat Tumuna, a concealed, a hidden Tumah, and therefore it should be Bekas Va'ola. We consider as though the Tumah spreads upward and penetrates through the closet. And therefore now is Matame the contents of the house. Rabbi Yossi says, no, Tumat Tumuna, in a Bekas, it doesn't do that. And therefore, so it's inside the cabinet, fine. Whatever's in the cabinet will become Tomei, but not necessarily the rest of the house. So therefore, so we see that Rabbi Yossi holds that Tumat Tumuna in a Bekas, and therefore, Abaya says, in the earlier case, when we had a network of ropes or something like that above a mess, then Rabbi Yossi can be saying that if he touched one of the ropes, you don't become Tomei, because the ropes would be considered, each individual rope would be considered to block the Torah. Mind you, ropes themselves, if they were Makabal Truma, then you'd have a different problem. You'd have a different issue that they themselves are Makabal Truma and they can't be a Hatzitzi. Even Rabbi Yossi would agree to that. But ropes in and of themselves are not Makabal Truma because they're not considered a Kaidi. Okay. So that proves the point that Rabbi Yossi holds that Truma Tumuna ain't a Bekas. So far that rounds out the discussion that we started learning yesterday, which is that therefore we can say that nevertheless we still have a case where Rabbi Yossi talks about a truma of negeya of touching, and really he doesn't mean touching, he really means a tumas oyho, and we're saying there are only certain cases where Rabbi Yossi would hold that an oyho transmits truma. As we talked about yesterday, one distinction is between whether the person himself forms the oil, such as by putting his hand over a source of truma, versus when they're under the same roof. Okay. But now the Gemara says, V'romi d'rab yosi ad'rab yosi. But now, though, we have a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yossi. If Rabbi Yossi is saying that a truma that doesn't have that sort, that a piece of truma, a piece of a mess, that doesn't have a cubic tefach over it, is nevertheless, the truma is not going to spread out of the actual location where it is located, meaning, in other words, we said before with the cubby, let's say, so it's in a cubby that's smaller than one cubic tefach, and nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi holds the truma is not going to spread outside of that cubby, or outside of that cabinet at least. The problem is, V'romi d'Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. I have a contradiction, though, between with that and something else that Rabbi Yossi says. It's not. Namely, we learn in another Mishnah in Masechta Olos. I guess I should have said at the beginning of the Perek, it's not just our Perek, it's not just a Gemara. Specifically, I mentioned there Masechta Uktzin, which talks about the dinim of Yad and Shomer and whatnot. It comes out really when you get down to it. Our Perek is very much in many ways a Gemara on various parts of Seder Taharas. See, we've been quoting a number of Mishnahs from Olos before we learned from Kalim, and then from Uktzin, you have a variety of different Masechtas in Seder Taharas where individual Mishnahs of them are being dealt with in this Perek. Again, really, this parak is more Seder Taharas topics as it is. The reason it's in our Masechta is, as we talked about at the beginning of the parak, Tosfos points out because we did have a point earlier in the Masechta that talked about the matter of things of Nevela being Matame, and therefore our parak started dealing with the whole matter of Tumas Nevelas and other related matters of Tumas Matame. Anyway, it's not. We learn in a mission and the Sefer all this. A kelev sha'ochob sarmes. If a dog ate flesh from a dead person, it takes time. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that a dog's digestive cycle is very long. Hashem makes a dog that keeps its food in its stomach for 3 days because people often don't feed dogs. You know, nowadays lots of people have dogs as pets, but back then it was very common. Most dogs were feral. Were wild or feral, and people didn't regularly feed them. So the Eibishter doesn't have chesed, and they say it's a very slow digestive process, so that way he can get the maximum nutrition out of his food. So eventually, if he ate flesh from a mess, and eventually it was in his stomach long enough, then eventually it'll get digested, and it's not going to be metame. We were talking about where it didn't go through the complete digestive process yet, and therefore it's still metame. Now, though, as long as the dog is alive, then we have what we learned earlier in the Masechta, and that tumor bluer, when you have a tumor that's swallowed up inside the body of a living creature, we talk about that a person who swallows a ring, for example, and here you have an example of an animal that swallowed the flesh of a mess. So as long as the dog is alive, then the tumor does not spread out of its body. Everybody agrees to that. But now the dog died. Now suppose that the dog is now lying on the threshold of the house. And so, yeah, part of the dog's body is inside the house and part of it is outside. And Rashi points out, we're talking about that the neck of the dog with the neck end, in particular with the mouth, is facing towards the inside of the house. So now, does the tumah, so now it's not tumah blua anymore. Now the question is the content of the house going to become tumah? So Rameo says, im yesh b'tzavorek b'seach tefach, if the neck of the dog is a tefach wide, maybe it's a tumah, then it is going to transmit the tumah into the house, because you're going to have the neck and you're going to have the mouth that are inside the house, and you're going to say, in other words, the neck is not, now we usually think of an oihel as an empty space of a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, but it doesn't have to be. Rameo holds anything that's a tefach in cross section can be considered an oihel, even if in fact it doesn't have an empty space anywhere in it, as in the neck doesn't have very much empty space in it, and nevertheless we still consider it to be an oihel. You have similar concepts that it talks about in the Sefer Oholos. For example, you have a bunch of blankets that are folded one on top of the other, or you have various other cases like that. You have wooden blocks or whatever, one on top of the other, where we can consider them to be an oihel because the aggregate height is a tefach, even though there's no empty tefach of space, because we can consider, in effect, as though the bottom ones were hollow, and then you have the top one is a tefach above the ground. Here you have, in particular over here, are we talking about that it's enough that the neck is a tefach wide, or does it have to actually have the space of a cubit? Does it have to actually have to have that it's large enough to contain a cubic tefach, and that one may have to be wider than that, because of course the neck is not square, it's circular or oval or whatever. So okay, so you have some discussion of Rishonim about that. But in any case, Reb Meir says as long as the neck is wide enough, we don't care that there's not much empty space in it. Nevertheless, we can still say that it transmits the tumah into the house, and therefore the result is that the house is going to be tumah. Tosfos brings up the point, actually, is the dead dog itself mekabel tumah. That'll make a difference also. You drew up a concept also. Reb Meir holds quick kin lahashlin. We have in certain cases, Reb Meir will hold when you have something which is not the full size that it needs to be, we can consider as though more space was carved out to make it complete. This comes up in Hilchos Mezuzah. We learned about it in Menachos, and it comes up here and there in Shas. In any case, Tosfos discusses why, according to the mayor, the stuff inside the house would be tummy. Fine. So the mayor says, if the neck is a tefach wide, then it'll transmit the tumah into the house. If not, then it doesn't transmit the tumah in, and therefore the contents of the house will remain tummy. So according to Tosfos, again, it's a matter of chokik and lahashlin. It's a matter of that we can consider, even though the neck is not in fact, doesn't in fact have a hollow space, a tefach by a tefach, we can picture as though it did, and therefore that's enough to bring in the tumah. Mefoshim explained that according to Rashi, actually it wouldn't be that, it would rather be a tumah midrabbatim. So that's one opinion. Rabbi Yossi says we have to consider where exactly in the dog's body is this kezias of the mess. The royin, we have to look at it. If the kezias of the mess is anywhere from the lintel of the door inward, so then the tumah is already inside the house. Habai is tumah, then the house is in fact going to be tumah. Never mind about this whole matter of the neck, of the width of the neck. The fact is, the tumah itself, if we were to x-ray the dog's body and find that the tumah is already inside the house, then automatically for that reason the house will become tumah. The keneged ha-shokos v'lachutz, but if it's outside the lintel, habai is tohar, then the contents of the house is going to be tohar. Now, at this point, the Gemara is understanding that we don't care whether the neck is a tefach wide or not, and Reb Meir would say, well, because of that, the neck is not a tefach wide, therefore the house remains tahor, and Reb Yossi is going to say, never mind that, if the tumah is inside the house, then it doesn't matter how wide or how narrow the neck is, either way, the house itself is overshadowing the tumah. So in other words, this is a case of tumah tumuna. This is a case of tumah that's hidden inside the dog's body, and it seems that Reb Yossi is being metameh. So that's the question we're going to ask. We just established before, based on the story with the mess and the rope, that that Rav Yossi holds that the case, well, that, and more to the point, in the case of the closet with the cubby in it, where Rav Yossi holds that Tumut Tmuna is not Matame going upward, but here you seem to say that it is. So we'll get back to that first. But first, we have two more opinions in the Mishnah. Rav Elazar Omer. Rav Elazar says it doesn't matter the width of the neck necessarily, and it doesn't matter, right, and it doesn't matter where exactly the tumah is inside the dog's body. The difference is piv lifnim. If the dog's mouth is facing towards the inside of the house, a bayis tahor, then the house is going to be tahor. And what are you going to say? Sof tumah lotzis. The fact is, how does the tumah go out? Eventually, something that when the dog ate, it's not going to usually come out. It's not going to usually come out of its mouth again. It's going to come out the other end. Well, the other end is outside the house, and therefore there's no reason to be metame the contents of the house, says Rav Elazar. But on the other hand, if the dog's mouth is facing towards the outside and its other end is in the house, well then, Abayis Tomei, then Rav Elazar says the house is going to be Tomei, because the Tomei is eventually going to come out through its rear end. And if you're going to say Sof Tumah Lotzis, then you're going to say that at that point, then the house is going to be Tomei. Now, you could argue that by the time it gets through that part, it's going to already been digested and not be Tomei anymore. Fine, but Rav Elazar apparently is not taking that into consideration. And he's saying, nevertheless, the fact is, as it is in its state right now, where it's Tomei, were it to come out, then it would come out that end, and therefore it would be Tomei. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda, and then you have a fourth opinion. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda says, "Bein kach or bein kach, doesn't matter where exactly the dog's body is lying, and it doesn't matter which direction the mouth or the tail is, and it doesn't matter whether the tumah is directly under the lintel or not. Either way, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda says, in all cases, a bias tumah. In all cases, as long as some part of the dog is in the house, either its mouth or its tail, we don't care." Then nevertheless, he still says that everything in the house is going to become Tomei. Rashi points out that, look, if the mouth is facing towards the door, is facing towards the inside of the house, okay, in sofa lots, it doesn't matter. Nevertheless, the way that it came in, the fact that it came in through the animal's mouth is also enough for tumor to spread out into the house. And of course, also sometimes Rashi points out also, after all, the dog could conceivably vomit it up and then it would come out that way. And vice versa. If the tail of it is inside, then you have, as Rav Elazar said, derech tumor losses. So now let's focus on, so we have four different opinions of what the story is as far as tumah in the house. But now let's focus on Rabbi Yossi's opinion. And by the way, all of the above would apply whether we're talking about flesh from a dead yid or a dead goy, because when it comes to, actually no, I should say that. I shouldn't say that. If it came from a dead goy, then you have machloikus in various places in Shas, whether a goy's body is matame ba'oyel, or only everybody agrees it's matame by touching or carrying. Is it matame ba'oyel? You have machloikus about that. So yeah, if this kazayas came from a goy, then not necessarily would there be an issue anyway, at least not according to Reb Shimon, who holds that goyim are not matame ba'oyel. The other tanoim may disagree with that. Okay. In any case, now let's focus on Rav Yossi's opinion. My lava aim at Savara Pesach Tepach Koy Rav Yossi. Now, when Rav Yossi is talking about and saying that we have to consider where in the dog's body where the tumor is located, my lava aim at Savara Pesach Tepach Koy Rav Yossi. Shouldn't we assume Rav Yossi is talking about when the neck is not a tefach wide, and he's saying to Rav Meir, you would hold that if the neck is not a tefach wide, no problem, and I'm telling you it's still a problem. Well, then that would demonstrate that Rav Yossi holds that a hidden tumor is a hidden tumor is where it doesn't have a tefach. It doesn't have a cubic tefach above it, is still penetrating through and being matame, because that's the only reason that the house would be that the contents of the house would be tame. So in other words, Tosfos says, when we say ruin, what does it mean? Rabbi Yossi had said that we look at it, we have to consider, it means we have to consider the tuma, is it under the lintel or is it not? And that's the only key factor. If it's inside the lintel, then it's going to spread upward and then the house and then the roof of the house, the ceiling of the house, is going to transmit the tuma to everything else in the house. Okay, so if we learn that way, then it comes out Rav Yossi is contradicting himself, because before we had him saying that in the case of the cabinet, that a tumah tmuna is not causing tumah to the tumah is not going to spread outward. So Omar Rava, So Rava says, fine, you have to understand a different, you have to understand Rav Yossi a little differently. When he says Royin, he doesn't mean you consider where in the house the Truma is located, but rather, Amar Rava, Royin is Chalala Truma, Patani. He's saying you have to look at the, you have to look at the space of the Truma. In other words, it's not enough. It's not enough, like Rav Meir says, that you have to have the neck as a tefa, is the size of a tefa. And we don't care the fact that most of the thickness of the neck is taken up with bones and flesh and whatever. And Rav Meir is going to have to resort to this idea of choykikin that we consider as though all of that was carved out and removed. And therefore we can consider as though there's a space of a tefach over there. Rav Yossi says, never mind that. You have to see, is there an actual space of a tefach inside the neck in any one point? So then, Royin is Chalala Truma Katani. Rav Yossi is going to be saying he's going to be maple over Rav Meir. Before we thought he's being machmer over Rav Meir. Now he's saying he's actually being maple, and he's saying you have to consider, is there a space for the Truma to come out? Rav Yossi, the Tauti Poli. So Rav Yossi, it comes out, is arguing on Rav Meir in 2 points. Namely, the Kamal of Rav Meir. So he's saying to Rav Meir, like, first of all, to Ka'amat Piyash Pitsavorai, per se, a tefach, maybe it's a truma. You're telling me that if the neck is a tefach wide, well, fine, a cubic tefach in area or whatever, however, in cross section, however you understand it, then fine. You're saying that in that case, maybe it's a truma, then it's going to transmit the truma into the house, even if you don't actually have a space in that neck. Because as Tosfos says, choykikin mahashlim, we're going to consider as though the inside of the neck was as though the bones and muscles and whatnot were carved out and left a space of a tefach. So Rav Yossi says, no. And then, we actually go according to the hollow space. Is there a hollow space in that neck of a tefach wide? If not, then there's no room for the tumor to spread outward. And the second thing he says to the mayor, Uda ka'amar kabayis kuloi tomei, and you're also telling me that the entire house is going to be tomei, or Marshal says actually the correct use is ale skupa kuloi tomei. You're telling me that if the dog is on the threshold, then everything in the house is going to become tomei, and it doesn't matter where, it doesn't matter as long as the dog's mouth is facing inside towards inside of the house under the lintel, then I don't care. You're telling me that we don't care where inside the dog's body the trauma is. No, Rav Yossi says it's still going to have to consider that as well. The kenegad hashocher for this name, if the kizayis of the mess is located from inside of a lintel. The lintel, by the way, the word shokhoth literally means the banging place. Rashi explains, a lintel may be very wide, but you have a particular place on it where the door bangs against it as it opens and closes. Rashi points out, the word shokhoth has a meaning in Aramaic of being beaten or being banged, whatever. Rashi brings from a number of places in Targum where we find that concept. So the shokhoth then would be, the part of the lintel where the door actually bangs against. So now that's considered to be the actual beginning of the house. So now Rav Yossi is saying that if the tumah is anywhere from that point inwards of the fnim, abayis tumah, then find the house is going to be tumah, provided also that you have, there's an actual space of a tefach in the dog's neck, and not enough that just the cross section of the neck is a tefach. But Mekinegra Shoka for the Lafot, but Rav Yossi is going to say if the tumah is located outside the house at all, and by his tahar, then the house is going to be tahar, because then, in other words, the truma is not even going to be transmitted through the dog's neck. So again, Rav Meir is going to hold Chokin Mahashlim, and Rav Yossi not. Now what about though? So Tosfos also explains that from that part where the door bangs against until the end of the lintel is not tefach in size. So in other words, that would not be considered an oihol. Rav Yossi agrees that an oihol has to be at least a tefach wide, and then now he would say, in effect, when you close the door, then you have, in effect, you have two oiholim, one next to the other, the house and the rest of the lintel, and therefore he's going to say that it doesn't transmit tumor into the house. And therefore, if the tumor was anywhere from the lintel inward, from the banging point inward, then sure, it could be metame of the house if the neck is wide enough. But if not, then either way, it's not even going to be metame of the house. So now, Tosfos also points out, by the way, that we would have to say Rabbi Lozer is not necessarily talking about the same case as Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi would be talking about where the neck is a tefach, has an actual space for tefach on it, and Rabbi Lozer would be talking about even where it's a smaller dog, where it doesn't have that, and says it doesn't matter as long as the head is inside, then either way. Rabbi Lozer had rather said it wasn't a matter of the head; it was a matter of the head. It was actually a matter of the tail. So he would say then that. So he would say there's no koseach tefa, but it doesn't matter. In other words, because he doesn't look at that end, he looks at the other end, the dog.
Okay.
So that's what Rabbi Yossi is. So in other words, we see that. So we see that Rabbi Yossi is being consistent and holding that tumah tmunah is not a problem, and only when you have, if the tumah is inside the house, if it's inside the dog's body, inside the house, and the neck has an actual space of a tefach on it, then sure, the tumah is going to go out through that and penetrate into the house. So that's what Rabbi Yossi is going to say. You have to look at mikneged hashokuf lefnim abayis tomei. Only if the tumah is from the lintel inward, only then is going to be the house. Only then is the house going to be tomei. Mikneged hashokuf lefnim abayis tomei. But if it's anywhere outside that, the house is going to be tomei, even though the dog's neck has a space of a tefach on it, because there's no reason that the tumah should spread into the house in that case. Nor is it going to be, and if it spreads upward, fine, it's going to be, well, Rabbi Yossi is going to hold anyway, it doesn't spread upward, but even if it did, fine, it's outside the house, and it's not going to affect anything in the house anyway. Okay, and the Gemara points out, Rav Acha Brei D'Rava, Masni Lo Behedya. In fact, Rav Acha Brei D'Rava's version of the Mishnah in Aulis said exactly that, when we said that Rabbi Yossi is saying Royin, and you have different views of Royin as a Tumah, that you see the Tumah. So Rav Acha Brei D'Rava's version of the Mishnah actually said explicitly, Rabbi Yossi and Royin as Halala Tumah. We have to look at the space of the Tumah. In other words, exactly that he's saying, you have to consider, is there an actual space inside the neck? Is there an actual hollow space inside the neck of consisting of at least a tefach by a tefach through which the Tumah would be able to spread, and if not, then nothing doing, and there's no tumah in the house. So that clarifies Rabbi Yossi's opinion, and so therefore we see Rabbi Yossi is not, in fact, contradicting himself. He's consistent with his opinion that says that he's consistent with his opinion and saying that tumah is not going to spread upward from something that doesn't have a tefach space inside it. Or actually, what Rabbi Yossi might say, Rabbi Yossi might well say, I mean, we're not saying it in the Gemara over here, but he might well say anyway that the tumah would be confined within the dog's body if there's a space of a tefach inside the actual body, but yeah, we're not really addressing that. So Gemara says, well, man tanah polygale. Okay, well, very well then. If Rabbi Yossi holds that, evidently there are other Tanoim who disagree. Now, we're saying this point that we said. So Rashi says we're referring back now to what we learned yesterday, where you have a case where a person touches a half a kazayas of a mess, and then you have a roof overshadowing him and another half kazayas, where we said that the Tanakama over there had said it wouldn't combine together because two different shames, two different designations of tumah, one is touching, one is oil. And Rabbi Yossi had disagreed and said that actually he would be tumah as well. Because Rabbi Yossi had said that maga can all, that touching can also be used as a name for oil. So we drew a distinction between whether it's within a tefach or above a tefach, and we had a whole discussion about that. But in any case, so Rashi says that we're talking about who argues with Rabbi Yossi on that. On the other hand, Tosfos says, oh, now that's not the Gemara's question over there, because we did say over there that Rabbi Yossi had had said, of course, there's such a thing as tumas oihel, because there's such a thing as tumas oihel baham shok. You have an oihel, which you have an oihel, such as the roof or the ceiling of a house, which spreads tumah from one thing to another. So no, Tosfos says, when we're asking who argues with Rabbi Yossi, who holds that Rabbi Yossi had said that an oihel can sometimes be considered touching, and that would be Rabbi Yossi. That implies that there's somebody else who holds that not. So who would that Tana be? And the answer is Rabbi Shimon. That would be Rabbi Shimon who argues with Rabbi Yossi on one or the other of those points. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Now, all this time you've been talking about, you have three kinds of ways in which a person can become, or Kaylee can become Tomei Mes. Food or drinks or anything can become Tomei Mes in one of three things: touching, carrying, or oichel. So now, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon points out that there's going to be a difference between these three. Sholosh tumas, poshus min ames. There are three kinds of tumas that separate from a mess. Namely, you're not talking about an entire mess. You're talking about there's many different things that can come from a mess that are matame. Rashi gives a whole list of things over here. But there are three particular types where each one of them, shtayim b'chol achas, where each one of them has two things in common, or shlishis ein behen, and it doesn't have the third. In other words, there's going to be three specific things, three specific types of objects or parts of a mess that Rav Shimon is going to say. Each one of them is matame in two different ways, but not the third one. So each of them is going to be distinct in that way. Namely, the three are the Elohein, and they are Meloy Tavad Rakov. The first one is a ladle full of rakov, of the powdery dust that a corpse decomposes into sometimes. As we talked about yesterday, when you have a ladle full of that stuff, then it can be matame a person. But as we talked about yesterday, because it's powdery, it's impossible to touch the whole thing at one time. So he says matame maso of oil, so that will be matame a person when he carries it, or it will be matame by oil, because you could be carrying it all at the same time, and you could be under the same oil as it at the same time. The ain't matame maga, but as we learned yesterday, it won't be matame by touching, because it's powder and it's impossible to touch all of it at once. The heichan magoi. So where are we going to find Tumas Maga from a mess in Achas Mehen with each of the other ones, each of the other two that he's going to list? The second one is Etzem Kisa'ola. The second one is a piece of bone from a mess the size of a grain of barley. Metame b'mago b'masa, such a piece of bone is metame by touching or by carrying. Which, by the way, this is the point where we see Rashi says, so the fact that he said about this Rokov, that if he touches it, he doesn't become Tomei. Now, we learned yesterday that Yossi had said that it is Metame B'maga, because we said he uses the word Maga to refer to oil. So we see that he argues with Rav Yossi on that point. Okay, next. Etzim Kisa'ora, bone the size of a grain of barley. Metame B'maga, Masa B'maga. It's going to be Metame a person by carrying it or by touching it. They ain't a Metame B'oil, but a piece of bone that size is not going to be Metame a person if he's under the same oil as it. Rashi says this is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Tosfos says we actually learn it from Pesukim. By definition, halacha l'moshe m'sinai is something that we learn from Pesukim. The fact that the detail that it talks about in Masechta Nazir, which is halacha l'moshe m'sinai, is a point that if a Nazir becomes Tomei from that, he would have to shave and bring his korbanos and restart his nazirus, which usually have rules over there that would go against that, and halacha l'moshe m'sinai tells us that not. But the actual truma of a piece of bone that size, Tosfos says, is actually based on a pus. Okay. In any case, so it's metame b'masa b'maga, but not the oil. The heichan oholoi. So what is the case of something that's metame b'oil? Is im achas mehen, is each of the other ones. Namely, when it comes to the rokov, and when it comes to the third one that he's going to talk about now, gurlo the dofik. The third thing is, the third kind of a mess, the third kind of tumor that comes from a mess, is the gurlo the dofik. We've learned earlier in the Masechta that we have Rashi. We learned earlier in our Masechta, we learned from Sukkim, that the Golo and Dofik are Matame as well. Throughout Shas, consistently, Rashi learned that the Golo means basically the tombstone, and the Dofik would be, Rashi consistently learns that the Golo and the Dofik are the parts of the coffin. The Golo would be the top of the coffin, and the Dofik would be the sides of it. So we actually had over there one. We had the was it halacha l'moshe m'sinai according to Rabbi Shmuel, or was he said over there that another way is we can learn it from pasuk l'chol sheyigal pnei asada, and therefore it wouldn't be considered halacha l'moshe m'sinai, because halacha l'moshe m'sinai means something we don't know a pasuk for. Whatever the case, the point is that Rashi points out that according to Rabbi Shmuel, not only do we learn if you learn it from halacha l'moshe m'sinai, then fine. The same halacha l'moshe m'sinai tells us that a girl of a dofik is not going to be the tamei a person when he carries it. if we say we learn it from Pasuk, it actually says, I don't know where we get from that it shouldn't be Matame. But in any case, Rav Shimon says, that's what it is. Gerlo the Dofik. So again, according to Rashi, Gerlo and Dofik are the top and the sides of a coffin. According to Tosfos, Gerlo means something more like the tombstone, and Dofik would be things that are put there to keep it in place, to hold it up. There are some people point out that you actually have in those times, it was very common where after you would bury mason in niches in the carved into the wall, and then he would roll a heavy stone in front of them to prevent the mess from sliding out. And Gerlo literally means rolling, so then Gerlo would be that rolled, that stone that you roll over there to close it, and Dofik would be kind of like when, think of like, for example, when you're changing a tire or something on a car, you chuck the wheels, you put something under the wheels to prevent the car from rolling, so then the Dofik would be the same kind of thing, would be things like that that you put under the Gerlo to chuck it and hold it in place. Okay, in any case, the point is, Rav Shimon says, Gerlo the Dofik, Matama Magro V'Oil, that will be Matama a person when he touches it, or if he's under the same roof as it, there ain't a Matama B'Masa, but it wouldn't be Matama by carrying. Now again, Rashi says, if you say it's halacha mochi misinai, well, very well, then that's part of the same halacha mochi misinai. If you say like Rav Akiva, we learn from a pasuk, then why shouldn't it be Matama B'Masa? Why is Rav Shimon saying it shouldn't be Matama a person when he carries it? Tosfos also the Rashba explain that actually we can learn it. The Gemara says, anybody who touches it when it's in the open field, that's where we learn the concept of Gerlo the Dofik, the point of Rabbi Akiva. So therefore we can learn, and the Gemara explains elsewhere that refers to Tumas Oil, and Maga is because the Torah says Asher Yigal. You don't have a pasuk that tells us Masa, therefore we need the time of the Masa. So the point is, according to him, the Heichan Masoi, so where would you have Tumas Masa, Im Achas Mehen, with any of the other two? So we see therefore that Rav Shimon is arguing with Rav Yossi, where Rav Yossi had mentioned before. So again, first to finish off Rav Shimon, so Rav Shimon would say then that only these three Tumas of a mess, rock of a bone the size of a grain of barley, and Gerlo the Dofik, respectively, each of those has only two of the three types of tumah. He's going to say all the other types of tumah that can come from a mess, not even a complete mess, a kazayis of flesh, a complete spine or a complete skull, etc., etc. Rashi gives a whole list over here. Most of those wouldn't be metame in all three ways, maga, masa, or oil. It's only these three that Rav Shimon says have this unique feature that each of them has two out of the three. So Rav Shimon is saying, though, that a person can't become tame with tumas maga from touching the maloi tagad roka, touching the ladleful of dust from the corpse. And then, whereas Rav Yossi had said, whereas before we learned that Rav Yossi had mentioned that a person could, we learned on Kuf Chayam and Beis, that Rav Yossi had said that Metame of a Mago of a Master of Oil, and we understood Mago over there to actually be a type of oil, so you see therefore that Rav Shimon is disagreeing with, that Rav Shimon is disagreeing with Rav Yossi on that. So this is a point of Rashi. On the other hand, many Rishonim argue on Rashi. They say, okay, but maybe Rav Yossi is talking about act. Maybe Rav Yossi was talking, as we learned yesterday, he uses maga for something where you're overshadowing it very closely within a tefach, but not actually touching it. Whereas Rav Shimon would be talking about actual touching. So why is there necessarily a contradiction between them? Why we said they're necessarily arguing? So those who showed him explain the proof rather that Rav Shimon argues with Rav Yossi is that we're saying that if he held like Rav Yossi, if he holds that a certain type of oil can be called touching, then you can find that also by the rock of you also have. You have the name Maga when you're touching it, when you're not touching it, but you're overshadowing it within the Tefach. Rav Shimon evidently therefore holds oil and Maga are really two completely different disjoint types of tumah, and therefore, so then, and that would be the point on which he disagrees with Rav Yossi, that to a certain extent Maga can also include oil. So that's that then. So this was all to explain again why in our Mishnah we had mentioned a bone of a mess that's not, which seemingly was not metame b'oil. So now we went through with this whole long discussion was to back up Rabbi Yochanan's point that even though the Mishnah didn't mention oil, it did mention touching. And according to Rabbi Yossi, you can say that certain kinds of oil can be called under the concept of touching, and therefore in fact the bone of our Mishnah would in fact be metame b'oil. So fine, there's only a certain type that he would call touching. There's a different type that he wouldn't. But nevertheless, that's good enough at least for us to be able to say That's good enough, at least for us to be able to say that therefore the Mishnah is implying some kind of Tumas Oil. Fine, it's maybe not implying all the different kinds of Tumas Oil, but fine, one explanation is that actually once at least we find that the Mishnah is implying some kind of oil, then fine, we can say that there's really no difference between one kind of oil and another, and therefore all of them will be Matami in the end. Now, the Mishnah continued, Kulas Nevela, the Kulas Asheretz. We said the bone of a Nevela or a Sheretz, which we said if they have marrow in them and there's a hole in the bone, even the tiniest hole, then they're Matami, a person who carries them. And then we said they're the Matami, a person who touches them, actually, because now we said unlike when the bone is sealed shut and it can't be considered a Shomer because it's impossible to get to the contents inside, now when it has a hole, conceivably, as we learned yesterday, a person could stick a hair of his through that hole and touch the marrow and become Tomei, and therefore the bone itself is considered to be a Shomer. So now when he touches the bone, then he'll become Tomei. So the Gemara says, the point though is that we're saying that the bone in and of itself is not metame. So the Gemara brings a braisa for this. Tana Rabbanan, beneath losa, the pasuk says when a person touches if nevela of the dead sheretz, which implies that the word beneath losa implies below the kolas suma, not if he touches a sealed closed up bone. One explanation is because the word nevela basically means something that will wither away, whereas the bones don't. The bones last long term. So from that we learn that if a person touches the bone, then he's not going to become Tomei as long as the bone is sealed. In fact, Tosfos points out, Udi and Masechta, we learn from that pasuk, in fact, that bones and Gidim are not Metame. So that's Tosfos says, once we exclude bones, then it means even when the bone does contain something inside, and it should be considered a shomer, but nevertheless, that's because you could get to the content inside, but here the pasuk is telling us that not. So if the person touches the sealed bone, he'll be tar. Yochal afil nikva, you would think that even if the bone has a hole in it, therefore the pasuk says one who touches becomes tamei. Now the word yitma will become tamei. We doubt it from the extra yud means esh liga tamei. Something where it's potentially possible to touch it is metame. In other words, yitma, he will be tamei because conceivably he could touch the tumah inside, and therefore even now when he hasn't actually touched it, then he still becomes tamei by touching the bone. The Eshe'i Eshe'i Liga, whereas when it's impossible to touch it, Tahar, then the bone is going to be, then the bone is not going to be, is not going to be Matame. So that's where we learn the din of our Mishnah about the bone of an Avela or a Sheretz. By them, there's no Tumas Oil, so the whole discussion before about Oil is not relevant. We're just talking strictly as far as touching and carrying. Okay, so the Gemara says, Omelet of Zera Labaya Elamanata. So by that logic, shouldn't we say, Behema Ba'ura Loitatame? By that logic, an animal that's still inside its skin, where you haven't skinned it yet, Loitatame, then it shouldn't be Matame yet, because you can't touch the flesh, and the skin itself is, and the skin itself is not Matame, because as we learned before, it's considered a shomer for the flesh, but only under certain circumstances. So Abaye answers, and we'll go see how many holes there are in it. There are in fact holes in the, never mind microscopic holes. You have large holes, you have the eyes, you have the mouth, etc., through which it's perfectly possible to touch the inside of the animal. Someone made a pop of the robber, but a papa says to the robber, here's a different question. How about then if you have a kidney of a nevela animal, which still has the layer of fat on outside of it, the renal capsule, loitatame shouldn't be metame even. The fela doesn't have too much nevela, as we learned earlier in Ormasef. It's mainly the Urashi refers to a Gemara in Pesachim that says that the chelav of a nevela is not metame. The body of the flesh of a nevela is metame, but the chelav does not. So now the kidney is completely enveloped within that chelav. By that logic, we should say lo tatame, that it shouldn't be metame, because you can't touch the kidney itself. And again, Rav Papa answers him, Tvachazi kamachutin limshachan emena. Have a look and see how many actual threads, blood vessels and nerves and whatnot, that go through that fat from the kidney itself, and those are considered part of the kidney. So yes, it is most certainly possible to touch the kidney itself, not the actual body of the kidney itself, but you definitely have pieces that come out from the kidney and are not chelev, that they're blood vessels or nerves or whatever. And those are able to be metame. And so you can't say that it's impossible to access them as long as you still have the fat on it. Okay. One more thing that Gemara asks, Boi Rav Oshia. So Rav Oshia now has a question. What happens with saying that if the bone has a puncture in it, then of the bone of Nevela or Sheret, then it's Matame as long as it has marrow in it, but if not, if there's no hole in it, then it's not Matame. Boi Rav Oshia. But Rav Oshia has a question. What about if he thought that he's going to make a hole in it, but he didn't actually do it yet? The question is, Mechusa Nekivuk, Mechusa Maisa Dummy. The fact that he didn't make the hole means a Maisa is missing. And therefore, and the Machshava is not enough, his thought is not enough to make it that it has a hole. So therefore, so he touches the bone, it'll still be chavur. Oh no, or maybe not. Maybe once he thought to do it, it can be considered to a certain extent, as though it's already accomplished. And therefore, now if he touches the bone, he'll become chavur. So he says, Hoda Poshta, after Rav Oshia asked the question, he answered, Mechusa Nekiva, Lavka, Mechusa Maisa Dami. In fact, just because he didn't make the hole doesn't mean anything once he put in the thought that he's going to do it. He decided he's going to do it. Then therefore, it is in fact considered. There's no Maisa lacking, even though in practice he hasn't done it yet, and therefore the bone is already going to be Matame right now. Okay. So that's as far as bones. So now the next Mishnah over here. Now we're going to start talking about in our next Mishnah. We're going to talk about similarly as far as eggs. Now you have some of the when it comes to eggs, we're going to be talking about strictly the egg of a sheretz, because animals don't lay eggs. Birds' eggs, you don't have an issue of nevela with them. The only issue of nevela you have with birds is if a person swallows the nevela, as we've learned many times. So only we're talking about sheretz of the Shemona Shirasim that we've learned over the last couple of days. Some of them, for example, we had among them were snails and lizards and so forth. So some of them lay eggs. So now we have to talk about as far as dinim of Tumah V'Tahara involving their eggs. The eggs themselves, of course, are also to eat, but we're talking about as far as Tumah V'Tahara. So the Mishnah says, Beit Tzas Asheret Samiru Kemes, when you have an egg of a sheret where the baby is already forming inside the egg. So you can already see middle chemist literally means that it literally means embroidered, meaning in other words, you already have something over there which is recognizable as a baby growing inside there. What exactly do you mean? How far it has to be developed to have that issue? Then you have different Rishonim understand, different Rishonim talk about different possibilities with that. In any case, so Tahora, if the shell of the egg is intact, then it's Tahora. A person touches the egg, he's not going to become Tahora for the same reason, because he can't touch the shell that's inside. Nikva kol shehu, but if the egg has a hole in it any size, then the same thing, Tomei, now a person who touches the egg is going to be Tomei for the same reason as with the bone. Then you could ask the question, why should the sheretz inside the egg be Matame anyway? It's still alive, it's alive, isn't it? I mean, it's not dead. It's not born yet, but it's not dead either. So there's one point is, so first of all, obviously we could be talking about where the sheretz did die inside the egg, but also another way of looking at it, the Ravid explains that since it's not, as long as it doesn't yet have an neshama, as long as it's not actually born yet, then it can be considered like a mess, and therefore it would in fact be metame. So now it can be metame through the shell, because the shell has a hole in it. Another din, the Mishnah says, Achlo shechetzi boser b'chetzi adam, a mouse which is half flesh and half dirt. Now, what kind of mouse or what kind of creature is this? So there's a number of ancient writers that describe such a creature that it forms from the earth. It does spontaneous generation where you have this earth over there, and then a clump of this earth turns into a mouse. So there's ancient writers who mention it. Chazal mentioned it over here, and in Sanhedrin, the Rambam says it's a very odd thing, a very amazing thing. I've heard many people describe such a thing, but I have no understanding how such a thing could even be possible. Eventually, in later times, beginning in the 1600s, scientists began coming up with the point that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. Creatures don't form by themselves. Anytime you have a creature, it means it comes from a previous living. So in that case, how would a mouse come from dirt like that? So you have different possibilities that have been brought up. Maybe, in fact, it is, as there have been those who identified it with a creature that lives in Egypt and surrounding areas called the Jerboa, where the eggs are, in fact, the eggs from which these creatures develop are, in fact, laid, or maybe it's not eggs, it's the babies themselves are born underground. The mothers bear the babies underground, and they wriggle or they fall out of the ground, and there comes a point when, like, they're half covered with dirt, and it looks as though they came out of the ground. So maybe it would be something like that. On the other hand, so maybe that could be an undiscovered species, just because scientists claim that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. All it means is their experiments haven't found one, but nevertheless, such things maybe could be possible. And after all, any of them who believe in evolution, after all, believe in a type of spontaneous generation anyhow, but that's a whole other matter. In any case, so there's a lot of discussion about that. There is an interesting point from Shamshon Afol Hirsch, I think, makes about this. He says, you know, listen, does it matter really whether such a creature actually exists? It's scientifically. Look, the Chachamim were told by people they could consider reliable that such creatures exist, the Rambam also. Fine, then we have to discuss what the halacha would be of it in case we do come across such a creature. The fact that they didn't find such a specimen themselves, what are you expecting them to go travel all over the place and try to find specimens for themselves? They don't have to. If they're being told that such a creature exists, then we have to discuss the Divin of it. Anyway, so the Mishnah says like this. Now again, this Achbar an Achbar is listed among the Shemona Shrasim. So, chetzi advosiv, chetzi adama, if half of it is flesh and the other half is still dirt, and they give a boser tame, so now if it's dead, if a person touches the flesh part, he's going to be tame, like any other sheriff. But adama tahar, but if he touches the dirt part, then he'd be tahar. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Even if he touches the dirt, shekin neged abasar, in the area that's corresponding to the flesh, meaning the part that is eventually going to become flesh. So right now it's dirt, but eventually that's the part which is going to become part of the flesh of the animal. Tame, then he would be tame because now it's already considered connected to and part of the sheretz. So first of all, let's talk about this matter of the egg. Tonar abonim, we learn in Braisa, when the pasuk says hatmeim, when the pasuk says eva hatmeim lachem, so the word, the hay means, we've already learned that from that hay, a number of drushes, it means that juice of a, it means that juice or whatever that exudes out of a sheretz is also to eat. We learned that the skin of a sheretz is sometimes considered like a flesh. Now we can also use it to use for the egg of the sheretz. Rashi earlier pointed out there's no particular reason any of those things should be considered any more stringent or lenient than the other, and therefore we can include all of them from the same drusha. So it concludes that Ravis Beitis HaSheretz, it comes to include the egg of a sheretz, that can be matame. Tosfos points out, as it is anyway, we learned earlier we're not allowed to eat it, so therefore we already see it's called a sheretz, so why do we need a special pasuk for it anyway? Fine, but Tosfos says it can be called a sheretz, but it can't necessarily be considered one of the Shemona Shrotzim to have a specific name, a cholod va'achbar, etc., that it should be atzog, etc., that it should be considered in that category and be matame. And therefore, we need a pasuk for it, and vice versa. Tosfos says maybe the other way around. We have this pasuk that tells us that they're considered a sheretz, and then in turn, we learn from that you can't eat them either. So the rabbis bates the sheretz, or kulos sheretz, or the bone of a sheretz that has marrow in it. So those are also the tamei, the bone as we learned in the previous mishnah, and the egg as we're saying over here now. Now you would think that means even if the embryo did not start developing inside the egg. Therefore, the pasuk says the sheretz, only when it has something that's like a sheretz. Ma sheretz shirikim, an actual sheretz has a form. Abates the sheretz shirikma, the same way for an egg of a sheretz. In the time, there also has to be something inside it that's formed. Now you would think it's matame even if there's no hole in the egg. Tamad lema hanigea yitma. Therefore, the pasuk says if he touches, he will become tame. So again, like we learned before, eshefsha ligabai tame. Only where it's conceivably possible to touch the content on the inside, even with a hair, then he'd be tame. But eshefsha ligabai tahor. But if it's impossible to touch it because it's sealed shut, then it would be tahor. But kamen nikivasa. How much of a hole, what size hole would be enough that now a person becomes tummy when he touches the egg? And the answer is to chota saira, even a hair's width. Because it's possible to touch by means of a chota saira, because like we learned before, a person could take a hair of his head or his beard or whatever and stick it through the hole and conceivably touch the sheretz inside. So that would be a reason. That would be a reason for him to become tummy. So we'll continue. So that's as far as the egg. And tomorrow we'll take up, again, this matter of the achra, shechetzi abosrim, chetzi adama, this odd creature that seems to develop from the dirt. And we'll talk more about the dinim of it. We'll also actually have some interesting agadah in that connection as well. Which, our masechta has so far been a little sparse on agadah, but we'll have some tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.